For this month's edition of the Jodcast, I interviewed Don Palacco from Queen's University Belfast about the WASP project. WASP stands for Wide Angle Search for Planets. Thank you very much for coming along and talking to us today. Tell us a bit about WASP and how you're going to detect planets.
Well, the WASP project has been brought together by a number of UK-based scientists primarily. And the idea was that as planets go around their own stars, then they block out a bit of the light. So those of you that remember the transit of Venus wouldn't know, but the Sun actually got slightly fainter during that time, about 1%.
We would have noticed all of a sudden that the Sun just got dimmer because the shadow of Venus was very, very small compared to the rest of the Sun.
That's right. But it's also similar to a total eclipse of the Sun, except less extreme. Hmm. In the case of a total eclipse of the Sun, the Moon is the same size as the Sun, so it gets a lot darker. Now, if the Moon was a lot further away, it would block out a small part of the Sun's disk, and we would see the Sun get a little bit fainter. Well, the same thing happens in solar systems a long way from our own solar system, in which case, though, we're only sensitive, or we can only see, large planets moving across their star. Now, I should explain, we don't actually see the planet at all, but we do see, or we can at least in principle, detect the light changing.
So we're looking at distant stars in the same way that we'll be looking at our own Sun, for instance, looking for our own planet, Venus, passing between us and the Sun. We detect, we want to see the little dip in light output from our own Sun. That would be the transit of Venus. You're trying to do the same trick with stars out in our own galaxy.
Okay, yeah, that is exactly right, Nick. The real problem we have is that we don't know which ones have got planets around them. And so while you can use various statistical methods so that you may expect maybe 1 in 1,000 stars to have large planets, which we could in principle see, the fact is we don't know which one in advance has got planets. In the case of the WASP telescope, or the Super WASP camera in La Palma, what we do is take images of large bits of the sky. They have thousands of stars on them, and then we analyse them with sophisticated software to try and detect which ones change by this tiny amount. And it's a very difficult thing to do. Just to give you an example, the amount of data we take would be the equivalent of the entire UK telephone directory every night.
Oh.
And tomorrow, another telephone directory. And then some poor sucker has to look through it.
And try and find which stars suddenly just went in brightness, ever so slightly.
And unlike the telephone directory, they don't have labels to tell you which one's which.
Yeah.
They all got the same name, except some of them are slightly different.
Fantastic. So I get it's also in the name, the fact that you're looking at large patches of sky, looking at thousands of stars. WASP stands for
Wide-Angle Search for Planets.
Wide-Angle Search for Planets. So tell us a bit about the telescope that's doing this work.
Okay, well, an ordinary telescope, which I'm sure most people have seen pictures of, will have a big lens, and then have a long tube, and then an eye or a photographic detector at the end, or a camera of some sort. And that's all very well, but the longer the focus of the lens, the smaller the bit of sky you look at. So a large telescope today that could see a large bit of sky would see about an area of the sky the equivalent of the Moon. Now, for us, that's not acceptable. We need to see something that is much bigger than that. So we have very short focus lenses, which look like telephoto lenses. They're very high quality, but they are effectively telephoto lenses.
So the sort of thing you could buy and put on your camera yourself for taking... You
know, most of our lenses came from eBay.
Oh, really?
Because they became obsolete while we were building the instrument, and we had to go all over the world to track them down.
Right.
But what makes us so good is that we have very expensive detectors on the end.
Right.
They're similar to digital cameras, except they're science-grade digital cameras. So instead of costing a few hundred pounds, they cost £30,000 each.
Right.
And in our case, what we do, we have multiple units like this. We have telephoto lenses with these detectors on, all on the same mounting. And so we can see a lot of sky. Mm-hmm. In fact, the telescope can monitor the whole of the sky in 30 minutes.
That's wide angle indeed, isn't it? The whole sky in 30 minutes.
That is. I mean, half of our cameras at one time could see the whole of the constellation of Orion.
Right.
So it's a huge amount of data, and it's a huge amount of sky.
How many stars would be on the fraction of sky that you could see at any one time?
Well, there would be many, 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 many thousands of stars. However, there's probably only about a million stars that we would be monitoring at any one time.
So they're the only ones that you actually notice any, where you record their light from.
Well, no, in actual fact, from the first season, we actually monitored the brightness of nearly 7 million stars.
Wow.
However, only about a million of them were actually bright enough to do the experiment that we were trying to do.
So you're only sensitive to planets going around relatively bright stars.
Bright stars and big planets. But there's a reason for the bright stars, and that is part of the confirmation of these objects involves the use of the largest telescopes. And it's ironic, we have a very small telescope to find these, and then a really large telescope to confirm them.
Right.
So to go much fainter would be pointless, because we could never confirm them.
Right. So you perhaps see something which you think might be a planet going around a bright star, and then you call up some folks at a larger telescope and tell them, can you please check this out and see?
If only it was that easy. It's a difficult game, because there are lots of things that can mimic these changes in brightness. And so we have to do a lot of almost detective work. We have to compare the brightnesses and the colours of these stars with catalogue values for them. And then we have to go and do a low-level sift, if you like, with a sort of medium-sized telescope to reject all the different kinds of object that can mimic our variable stars.
What are you actually looking for a transiting planet going around a bright star? It, I presume, looks pretty much flat. The light coming out of the star is the same the whole time, and all of a sudden the planet starts to go across the face of the star and the light from the star just seems to go down as the planet blocks out some of the light.
The star will get fainter for about a 2-hour period by about 1%.
About 1%. So 1%. That's the level, that's the change. In, yeah. That's very small.
That's tiny. I mean, the atmospheric variations are bigger than that.
Mm.
And so we have to use some quite tricky software to remove lots of trends in the data.
By atmospheric signals or alterations, that's our own atmosphere. That's the atmosphere causing sort of fluctuations.
Yeah.
Mm. So that change of 1%, what size planet does that correspond to? Is that something like Venus, or is it Jupiter, or is it something bigger?
That is a Jupiter-sized planet around a solar-type star.
Right.
If you look at smaller stars than the Sun, then you could, in principle, see smaller planets. To see Earth-sized planets, you probably need to be above the atmosphere.
Right.
Because the Earth's atmosphere, like I said, induces these very small scale variations which hide the variation we're looking for. Mm. So there is in fact a satellite going up in a couple of years that will do exactly that. It will look for very small variations.
Right. Well, let's talk about the WASP telescope though. That's located where?
There are two, actually.
There's two?
There are two, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
WASP is located, Super WASP is located in La Palma.
Right.
And WASP South, which is the other one, which is really a clone of the northern one, is located in South Africa.
Okay.
The reason most people don't know about them is it's a bit of a stealth project.
Ooh.
Because most of the money is actually privately funded.
Oh, right. Well, that's interesting. Why is it a secret, though? I mean, why shouldn't these people want...
It's not a secret. It's just that it's only over the last couple of years we've been applying centrally, and that's how most astronomers find out about the project.
Right.
Because then they get to referee our proposals. But the reason for this was that when we originally tried to get money, people were very sceptical of the project. It's a very ambitious and a difficult project to do.
Mm.
And when money is short, you tend to give money for more certain projects. So if you look at what's going on, there's a lot of money going into big telescopes. But this is so novel and so radical that it's been difficult to get the money. It's easier now.
Where does the money come from? Can you tell us where the money comes from?
Some of it has come from blackmailing certain people. But...
and that's how modern astronomy is done, everybody. It's through blackmail. Serious?
No. Well, I am actually. No. No. To be fair, we did manage to get a small grant from the Research Council, PPARC, to start with. And then after that, we were fortunate to get some money from Queen's University and then the Open University, St Andrews University, and now Keele
right.
University as well.
You mentioned that there are two telescopes, WASP and Super WASP.
Yeah.
What makes Super WASP super?
The reason Super WASP is called Super WASP is that originally we were building the WASP telescopes. And when we were trying to get the money from Queen's, I was put on the spot as to say why this new instrument we were going to build was going to be so much better than the other name, or the other instrument. And I was on the spot, so I had to think of a name, and it was Super Wasp. The reason we still call it that, as opposed to Wasp North or something like that, is that within Queen's University and within the Canary Islands, it is known as Super Wasp.
Right.
But they are the same. I just have to remember the jargon and the terminology, so I don't upset too many people.
Of course. Let's think about the actual system of planets that you're going to be detecting with these telescopes. Now, the planet going around the star that you're observing, the transiting planet, has to be almost in line with us. That's true, right? I mean, because the star itself is so small, the planet has to be going between us and the background star.
Okay, well, let me say that when people first started discovering planets, one of the surprising things was that they were discovering large planets in very short orbits. And if you compare it to our solar system, it's quite different. If you look at our solar system, you've got large planets in orbits of many years, like Jupiter's 12-year orbit. You've got Mercury, the planet closest to the Sun, which is tiny and is in an 88-day orbit. So these planets we were discovering were really quite different. They're Jupiter-sized or bigger in periods of just a few days. So clearly there's either something very unusual about our solar system or we were just sensitive to these kinds of planets.
Right.
They're the easiest kinds of planets to discover.
These large planets close to their parent star.
And to detect a transit, the further away the planet is from the star, the more unlikely the transit is to occur in the first place. So that's why we find these objects. But the important thing about these objects is that because we know the plane of their orbit, because that's why they transit, we can actually use some geometry to discover lots of things about these planets individually, and then we can test models of their formation.
Right. So what can you learn from what you observe, this little dip?
Yep. From the transit itself, you can determine the size of the planet.
Right.
You can then combine it with other studies to get the mass of the planet and therefore its density.
Hmm. So you know roughly pretty much how heavy it is, how large it is, therefore the density, therefore probably what it's made of, and therefore probably how it got made.
The difficulty is understanding how they got there.
Right.
Because it is very difficult to make a Jupiter-sized planet very close to a hot star.
Mm.
They tend to evaporate away.
It's one of the biggest problems currently facing our understanding of how planets are made. And certainly, when we've discovered all these large planets close to their parent star, like you mentioned, it kind of confused a lot of people, didn't it?
Absolutely. And people then started developing models that would make the planets further out and then move them in to the star. And some of them, in some of these models, move straight into the star and disappear.
So there's a lot of work to be done, and we need to find more planets to get a wider range. I mean, the planets we've found so far, most of the planets, these large planets close to the star, are unlike, as you say, our own solar system. So
that's right. I mean, this is a new subject in astronomy, and we're very much in the discovery phase at the moment. And the observations, I should say, are all incredibly difficult, very, very difficult. The variations we're looking for are very small. They're just not easy to see. But at some point, it will move to one of trying to quantify what we're seeing in a more physical way so that we can test models.
Well, that sounds good. Are these telescopes operational currently? Are they getting their phone book of data every day and you're analysing it in pretty much real time, I suppose, because you need to see the information?
What I should say is that it took a long time to develop the software for these instruments.
I can imagine. You're looking for a 1% change. I mean, that's out of thousands of stars over most of the sky. That's a terribly difficult job.
And especially when you think that things like electronics vary and the sky is changing, the conditions are changing all the time. So it is a very difficult thing to detect. But we have several hundred actual candidates now, of which maybe about 30 or 40 are really good candidates. And those objects are currently being followed up with the larger telescopes as we speak.
Right, so they're candidates. We're not 100% sure whether they're real planets or not, but you're going to check them out with bigger telescopes.
The thing with this kind of experiment is that you can never be sure until they've been followed up.
Mm.
So a WASP camera is only really good for detecting candidates, and then it needs to go to a big telescope to confirm them. The way this has worked so far is that people have done surveys with big telescopes, and that takes an awful lot of very expensive big telescope time.
Yes.
This, in principle, is cheap, and it finds you the ones that are the most interesting, because they're the ones that you can fully solve with geometry.
Well, we wish you all the best of luck, and thank you very much indeed for giving us the talk.
Thanks, we need it.